This is edition number 1912 of the Mardler, recorded at Aylsham on Friday the 19th of April 2024. Hello and a warm welcome to the Mardler, the weekly talking newspaper for North Norfolk, recorded here at Aylsham. Turning first of all to the notice board, we offer a special welcome to new listener Joyce Cook of Stalham. Many pleasant hours of listening to you, Joyce. The only other item this week, the sun rises around at 5:50 a.m. and sets at about 8 p.m. Our week's news and views are from the North Norfolk News of Thursday, the 18th of April, 2024. I am Chris Lodes, and the readers in the studio with me are
Ruth Harrison,
Debs Hall,
and Delia Malin.
The magazine supplement, which confirms spring has sprung down the garden path and elsewhere, that lusty Lord Loom and those age-old sayings are not just things of the past, will follow a little later in the programme. Moving on, our first section of news include
TV licence evasion, mostly women prosecuted.
Serious injury after XL Billy attack.
Can Broad's Village Post Office be saved?
But we begin with speed limit reduced, where youngster lost his life. The speed limit on a road where a 13-year-old boy died in a hit and run is to be reduced. Alfie Brown from North Walsham died when he was knocked off his bike by a Ford Ranger truck on the B1145 Napton Road near the village of Swayfield in August last year. Police are still investigating the incident. Now the speed limit on the road between Swayfield and Napton will be reduced from 60 miles per hour to 40 miles per hour. As well as the speed limit being reduced, a priority system will be put in place over the bridge entering Swayfield, with priority given to vehicles leaving the village. There will also be additional village gateways and signage installed, making 30 mile per hour signs in the village more visible. The speed limit at the Narrow Pond Land in Napton is also set to be halved from 60 miles per hour down to 30 miles per hour. North Norfolk MP Duncan Baker said, "I promised everyone during my major public meeting that I would not stop working until we saw safety improved along the B1145. I'm so pleased to be able to say this will now happen. This is a huge piece of news and will directly impact so many in Swayfield, Napton and all the people who regularly use the road. A huge thank you to Councillor Ed Maxfield, Councillor Peter Netherway and Tim and Boris from Swayfield Parish Council for all their hard work to help get this across the line. Boris Konachensko, Chairman of Swayfield and Bradfield Parish Council, added, "After many months of close collaboration between David Alfrey from the North Norfolk Council, our MP Duncan Baker and Swayfield and Bradfield Parish Council, we're delighted that it has been possible to incorporate our village's input into a comprehensive revamp of the highway plans for Swayfield and Napton." At an inquest review into Alfie's death in February, Norfolk Coroner's Court heard how a full hearing would proceed once the police investigation was complete. A man in his 50s was arrested on suspicion of causing Alfie's death and has been rebailed until May the 10th.
Hundreds of people have been prosecuted for TV licence evasion in Norfolk, and almost three quarters of those were women. Ministry of Justice figures reveal there were 207 adults prosecuted across the county in 2022, with 140 women. It comes as the TV licence increased to £169.50 this month, up from £159. A TV licence is a legal requirement for anyone wanting to watch live TV on terrestrial channels or online streaming. Those without a licence can be fined up to £1,000 plus legal costs, and in some cases additional compensation. Last month, a 28-year-old woman from Sprowston appeared before Norwich Magistrates Court for not having paid the licence fee, while a 61-year-old woman from Norwich launched an appeal arguing she had been incorrectly prosecuted. You cannot be sent to prison for a TV licensing conviction, but courts can decide to send you to prison for deliberately refusing to pay the fine. The threat of being jailed has long proved controversial and is currently being examined as part of a review into the future of the TV license as a way to fund the BBC. Announcing the review, Culture Secretary Lucy Fraser said, "It will specifically look at the issue of criminal prosecution of the licence fee, something I personally feel is morally indefensible in modern times, an issue that can only be changed at the Charter Review." Tom Franklin, Chief Executive of the Magistrates Association, said the organisation was concerned prosecutions disproportionately affect women. He said women are more likely to register as heads of household or are more likely to be at home during the day, therefore more likely to answer the door to inspectors. What we're clear about is that a better understanding is needed of what is behind the disparity, and then action should be taken to address it going forward, he added.
Critics have called a landmark seafront building a monumental mistake after years of problems which have left the Norfolk Council with a £1 million repair bill. North Norfolk District Council has agreed to spend the hefty sum to remedy numerous issues affecting Cromer's Rocket House, which include damp and corrosion. But it has left one councillor questioning why the structure just above the beach at the end of the town esplanade was ever built in the first place. Angie Fitch-Tillett, who leads the independent group at the authority, said a cabinet meeting this week that the council ignored warnings about the hazards of the location when the plans were first proposed in the early 2000s. It has suffered two storm surges since it was built in 2007 and again in 2013. Coastal engineers were also reportedly not consulted at the time. She said, "I don't want to say we told you so, but you've been left in an unenviable position of having to support a project that you know to be a monumental mistake. You've been left between a rock and a hard place, and no one is brave enough to stop investing in this foolhardy scheme." The Rocket House has been plagued with problems in recent years, which have resulted in the RNLI having to close its Henry Blogg Museum due to chronic damp issues. However, the cafe continues to be in operation. Tim Adams, leader of the council, said he was only 11 years old when plans for the building were first approved and acknowledged it is a challenging situation. "Rocket House is important for the future of the area and its continued economic prosperity," said Mr. Adams. "We are not in an ideal position, but this is the most logical way forward." He added that the damp issues were a relatively simple problem to solve, but it was proving complex. Cabinet members voted unanimously to approve the £1 million restoration of the building.
A woman has been left furious after her roadside honesty box was broken into for the third time in recent memory. Anja Dixon owns a small plant stall in Sir William's Lane in Aylsham, which is not supervised and instead relies on people depositing money into a box in good faith. The box, which is made of wood and fastened with a padlock, was broken into between Sunday and Monday by someone who had come prepared with a screwdriver. "I am furious with whoever did this," Miss Dixon said. "We have obviously been watched when we were in and when we were out. Now I need to warn others who have little stalls outside their houses so they can protect their earnings from being stolen or their property being damaged. Might I suggest to whoever did it, make your own money instead of stealing others." According to Ms. Dixon, it is not the first time her stall has been targeted. She added, "I had plants and ready-made planters taken. I had donations-based items for charity for sale, and the donation box got taken."
A woman is in hospital with serious injuries after being attacked in her home by an XL bully dog. She was trying to break up a fight between two dogs at the property in Holt when the animals turned on her. The woman, who is in her 20s, was able to barricade herself into the bathroom for her safety before shouting for help. A neighbour in Pheasant Close, a quiet cul-de-sac on the edge of the town, heard her cries and raised the alarm. Firefighters, as well as police, were sent to the scene, and locals say fire crews had to help the woman to escape from the property through a window to avoid the dogs. The incident happened shortly before midnight on Tuesday. The victim was taken to the Norfolk and Norwich University Hospital, where she remains. Police confirmed that one of the dogs, an XL bully, had since been destroyed. The other animal, which neighbours have described as a pit bull type dog, has been seized by officers and experts are trying to determine its breed. A spokeswoman for Norfolk Police confirmed that it was still investigating the incident. Restrictions on XL bully ownership came into force on February the 1st, 2024, and it is an offence to own one without an exemption certificate. The government introduced the changes after a series of attacks involving the breed. In November, the owner of a 6-stone XL bully was left with life-changing injuries after the dog set on her in her garden in Brisley near Dereham. The attack lasted more than half an hour before police arrived and were able to get the animal, named Denver, off her. The dog then escaped from the garden and made its way to the grounds of a nearby school, where it was killed by police. Government officials say there have been 23 deaths caused by dog attacks since the start of 2021, with XL bullies disproportionately involved. As well as it being illegal to own an XL bully without a certificate, it is also now an offence to sell, abandon, give away, breed or walk one without a lead and muzzle.
Two men have admitted stealing thousands of pounds worth of beauty products during a series of shop raids across Norfolk. Florin Zaplin, 20, and Yonat Kurt, 19, targeted a series of branches of Boots and Superdrug during a day-long shoplifting spree from King's Lynn and Great Yarmouth. The Romanian pair made off with huge quantities of various cosmetics, makeup, and other health and beauty products worth more than £4,000 in total. Their crime spree on January 22nd was eventually halted when the Ford Focus they were using to travel around the county was stopped by police for being uninsured on Brackendale in Norwich. Both men had travelled into Norfolk from Peterborough to specifically hit stores where they could steal easy-to-resell beauty items, a favourite target for shoplifters because of their small size but high value. A gang of six Romanian women are currently awaiting trial at Norwich Crown Court in September for a separate shoplifting plot that allegedly saw them steal cosmetics worth more than £30,000. Zaplin of New Road in Peterborough appeared at Norwich Magistrates Court to be sentenced, having previously pleaded guilty to four counts of shop theft, as well as driving without licence or insurance. Magistrates adjourned the case after hearing that he had failed to attend an appointment for a pre-sentence report. He was warned all options, including being sent to prison, remain a possibility, as his sentencing was adjourned to King's Lynn Magistrates Court on May 9th. Bail conditions ban him from all stores except a branch of Lidl. An arrest warrant was issued for Kurt of Cobden Avenue in Peterborough after he failed to turn up in court. The pair admits stealing items worth £1,091 from Superdrug at Fakenham, £334 from Boots in King's Lynn, £574 from Boots in Cromer, and £970 from the branch of Boots at the Gapton Hall Retail Park at Great Yarmouth.
The family behind a thriving bistro on the Norfolk coast are the new owners of the neighbouring fish and chip shop. Couple Gail and Nicholas Deary, aged 49 and 50 respectively, opened Beach Rock Bistro along Beach Road in Sea Polling in 2021. It has built up a strong reputation for its tasty dishes using local produce, including fresh seafood caught along the Norfolk coastline. When the adjoining Beach Rock fish and chip shop closed in December 2023, the pair decided to take it on. Mrs. Deary said it made sense for both businesses to be run by the same family and to have consistent opening hours. Both places complement each other but still have a distinct offering. The Chippy has been renamed the Mermaid's Catch and it has now reopened after an extensive refurbishment including new equipment and a blue colour scheme. There are picnic benches outside and some bar stalls inside with the option to tuck into plated fish and chips in the evenings at the bistro. The menu at the Chippy includes cod, haddock, scampi, loaded fries, fresh local crab, pies, cauliflower wings, pizza and much more, with gluten-free and vegan options and a children's menu too. The family's association with Sea Polling goes back a century and the couple's three children, Elsie, Harrison and Max, help out with both businesses. Before opening the bistro in 2021, Mrs. Deary held an HR position in a catering company and Mr. Deary worked offshore. Mrs. Deary added, "The reviews of the Mermaid Catch online so far have all been 5 stars and we have been overwhelmed with the support from people in the village. They are very pleased to have their fish and chip shop back." The Mermaid's Catch is open from 12 noon to 7pm, 7 days a week.
A man who fell off his boat on the Norfolk Broads was left stuck in the water and mud for about 40 minutes before rescuers were able to reach him. Rocky Start was on his own in his 14-foot motorboat, travelling between Horning and Salhouse, a remote stretch of the River Bure, when the incident happened. He said he was standing on the stern when he slipped on the wet surface and fell in. Mr. Start, the co-founder of a music events company, was unable to lift himself back into the vessel, but managed to reach in to grab his mobile phone to raise the alarm. "I clung to the back of the boat, deep in the mud, trying to climb back but failing every time," he said. "My phone was on the back seat and I managed to reach over and grab it. I then put a call to 999. The Coast Guard stayed on the line with me the entire time, helping reassure me. The call handler was amazing." The father of two said that by the time the emergency services reached him, he wasn't far off not being able to hold on anymore. Mr. Start says he was able to get to the side of the river and pulled himself up into the muddy reed bed on the bank, where he said he became nearly hypothermic. He fell in at around 7:30pm on Thursday. It took the emergency services around 40 minutes to reach the remote spot. Fire crews, police, the Hemsby lifeboat and local coast guards were all sent to help the man who lives in Hoveton. He added, "To be honest, I was very, very lucky. The emergency services were amazing. I want to thank them all." After being taken back to the Swan Pub in Horning, he was wrapped up and taken to the N&N for further checks. But he says he was lucky to have escaped with only a few bruises and nettle stings. The rescue is the second boat drama on the Broads this week. On Tuesday, four holidaymakers ended up in the water after their 24-foot sailing cruiser capsized and sank after being struck by a Roger, a very strong, sudden blast of wind.
And here are a few shorter items of news. A man has appeared in court charged with making and distributing online sexual images of children. Stephen Maddox faces 6 charges said to have been committed over a 5-month period between November 2021 and April 2022. The 38-year-old of Munsley Road in North Walsham spoke only to confirm his name, details and to confirm he was entering no plea to the allegations when he appeared before Norwich Magistrates Court. The offences he is accused of include that he made 54 Category A images, the most severe, which involve a child being subjected to sexual acts. He is also charged with making 160 Category B and 30 Category C images, Other allegations include distributing 34 Category A, 21 Category B and 29 Category C images. The court was told the offences carried a sentencing starting point of 17 weeks imprisonment and were too serious for the magistrate's powers. Lucy Brakewell for Maddox did not oppose an application for the case to be committed to Norwich Crown Court, with a preliminary hearing on May the 8th. Maddox was given unconditional bail. And a driver who ran a red light before crashing into and injuring a cyclist has kept his licence. Rourke Bolton, 23, was on his way to work when he knocked the cyclist off their bike at lights on Norwich Road in North Walsham on September the 14th last year, leaving them with cuts and bruising. Norwich Magistrates Court was told quantities of cocaine, ketamine and cannabis were discovered in his Ford Fiesta. Bolton of Abbey Park in Beeston Regis, Sheringham, pleaded guilty to driving without due care and attention and possession of Class A and B drugs. Natasha Baker, mitigating, said he did not accept he had been speeding and had gone through a red light as he did not believe he had time to stop. He saw the cyclist but was unable to stop in time, but he immediately checked on their welfare, she added. She said he had been self-medicating with cannabis and ketamine at the time, but had since sought help. Magistrates handed him 5 points on his licence to add to 3 he already had. They also ordered he paid fines and costs of £930 and £600 compensation.
A father and son have been warned they could be sent to prison after admitting cannabis dealing. Lee Bristow, 42, and his 20-year-old son Kit appeared side by side in the dock at Norwich Magistrates Court. They were both arrested following a police raid in Cromer in 2022. Rima Begum, prosecuting, said officers had discovered a quantity of cannabis while seized mobile phones were subsequently found to contain messages indicative of the buying and selling of drugs. Lee Bristow of Keys Road in Norwich pleaded guilty to being concerned in the supply of Class B drugs between June 2022 and November 24th of that year. The court was told he had previously been convicted of the production of cannabis in 2015. His son of Walpole Gardens in Norwich admitted involvement in drug supply between October 21st and November 24th, 2022. Ralph Gilman, mitigating, said they both admitted having a significant role in the dealing operation. Deputy District Judge Jackie Appleton warned them all options, including being jailed, remained open when they are sentenced on July 17th. And Norfolk Constabulary is second in the list of the fastest call response times in the UK, according to a new study. Norfolk was second fastest, with the average call response time being 7.16 seconds. The mean answer time for each month is under 8 seconds. Quickest was the neighbouring force, Lincolnshire, taking an average of 7 seconds to answer 999 calls. Suffolk took 17 seconds. The analysis of police.uk data by personalinjurycompanyclaims.co.uk calculated the average time it took for a call to be transferred to each police force in the UK from March 2023 to February 2024. The Home Office began to publish 999 response call times in 2022, in a bid to further improve the speed of the service provided to the public. The national target is to answer 90% emergency calls in less than 10 seconds. The first performance table showed Norfolk ranked 5th, with the more recent data suggesting its performance has improved. Bedfordshire Police had the slowest response time, taking more than half a minute to answer a 999 call on average.
An 89-year-old former clerical assistant died in a care home after having a fall, an inquest has heard. Helen Foster died on March 28th at Ingham Old Hall Care Home, near Stalham, where she lived at the time. The inquest was opened on April the 11th by area coroner Yvonne Blake, who confirmed the medical cause of the death was a head injury. The hearing was also told Mrs. Foster, who had dementia, was married to a man named Ernest and had been born in Henstead near Beccles. And people are invited to explore a secret North Norfolk estate that has sat empty for almost three decades. Walterton Park is an 18th century Palladian hall which sits on a 500 acre plot near Aylsham. It was built in 1741 by Horatio Walpole, the brother of Britain's first Prime Minister Robert Walpole, and has sat empty for the past 27 years. This year, Bosses are restoring the property to its former glory and will open its doors for its first ever series of artisan craft workshops. Participants will begin their day at 10 a.m. by enjoying coffee and cake in the Georgian Hall. They will then hear from an expert on making either spring hand-tied bouquets, patisserie sweet treats, or gardening. Everyone will then be offered a glass of fizz before being taken on a unique tour of the venue's state rooms. The workshops cost between £95 and £125 per person and run from 10 a.m. till 1 p.m. on selected dates between April 17th and September 12th. Martin Wickham from Walterton Park said everyone who visits Walterton falls in love with it, and our new workshop programme provides an opportunity for an exclusive experience in a gorgeous setting.
A Norfolk carvery has been hit with a 0 out of 5 food hygiene rating. Crofter's Carvery Restaurant and Takeaway in Sheringham has received the Food Standard Agency's worst food hygiene rating after a recent inspection, requiring urgent improvement. Officers found the High Street Carvery requires major improvement across all areas, including the hygienic handling of food, cleanliness and condition of the restaurant, and its management of food safety. Crofter's Carvery Restaurant and Takeaway declined to comment. And Sea Scouts are gearing up to host their annual parade and are expecting a turnout of more than 700 attendees. The first Cromer Sea Scouts are once again hosting the St George's Day Parade in Cromer on April the 27th. The parade is expected to draw more than 700 individuals, including participants from squirrels, beavers, cubs and scouts, along with their families from across northeast Norfolk. The event will commence at 10:30 a.m. with a procession from Runton Road Clifftop Field, accompanied by the Causton Band. The parade will conclude at Cromer Parish Church, where Scout promises will be renewed. Matthew Bussey, Group Scout Leader, said, "This event allows us to honour the values of Scouting and pay tribute to St George, the patron saint of Scouting, while promoting a sense of pride and togetherness within our community. St George's Day is an avenue for Scouts to showcase their skills and celebrate the principles of Scouting. Neighbours, businesses and visitors are encouraged to join and support the event."
Annual Classic Vehicle Day offers a range of vintage cars, features pop-up showroom and Harley-Davidsons. Study Lodge Gardens will host its 6th annual Classic Vehicle Day on May the 19th between 11:30 a.m. and 5 p.m. This year's event, sponsored by Anglia Car Auctions ACA, features a pop-up showroom providing a showcase of classic cars and memorabilia set within the picturesque grounds of Study Lodge Gardens. The spectacle of the day promises to be the sight and sound of 160 Harley-Davidsons, which will again join the event as part of the Norfolk Distinguished Gentleman's Ride. Last year, this event raised more than £19,700. Founder of Anglia Car Auctions, Lynn George, said, "We are delighted to be supporting classic vehicles at Study Gardens. The event is a brilliant combination of some top-notch classics and very knowledgeable owners, plus all the flowers, food and fun of the gardens. a great day out for all the family. Event-goers can also enjoy a selection of food and drink, including chips by the Bucket List, traditional burgers and hot dogs by local butcher, H.V. Graves and excellent music by DJ Jules. Kate McNichol, owner of Study Lodge Garden, said, "It is fantastic to have such an established firm as Anglia Car Auctions sponsor our 6th annual Classic Vehicle Day. We can't wait to see the classic cars and memorabilia they want to showcase to our visitors. And Guy Snelling of ACA's expertise will be invaluable for judging our Vehicle of the Day award. Our visitors can recover from the roar of 160 Harley Davidsons with delicious food, drink and music within the gardens. We are very pleased to welcome Norfolk and Waveney Mind back to fundraise in the tea rooms and offer our visitors their delicious homemade teas. Entrance to the event costs £9 per person, with drivers of a classic vehicle and children under 12 admitted free."
The wife of a mechanic who died while undergoing rehabilitation for a brain injury had zero confidence in hospital staff. Sharon Breary raised her concerns at a two-day inquest into the death of her husband Neil, who died at the Norfolk and Norwich Hospital, NNN, on April 6th last year. Norfolk Coroner's Court heard how the 55-year-old from Horning had been admitted to Coleman Hospital, Unthank Road, Norwich, on February 23rd, 2023, for his rehabilitation. On March 31st, he became unresponsive and was taken to the NNN, where he deteriorated and later died. In a statement to the court, Mrs. Breary raised several concerns about her husband's care while at the Coleman Hospital and revealed she had kept a daily diary outlining his care. She said, "I do not think the people there are competent to deal with people with brain injuries. There is a lack of ability to do a basic task efficiently and successfully. I also had zero confidence with a member of staff, and more so over the weekends, due to the continued lack of caring qualities and ability to support Neil with his brain injury." In her conclusion, Area Coroner Yvonne Blake explained that Mr. Breary had 3 falls as an inpatient there, but did not appear to have suffered any injury. She said, "During the day of March 31st, a lump was noted on the back of his head by one member of staff. It is not known how this occurred. That evening, he deteriorated, he vomited a total of 3 times, and then became unresponsive and twitching. The staff nurse put him in the recovery position and administered oxygen, but he did not improve. She then called 999 and he was transferred to the acute hospital. A CT head scan demonstrated a catastrophic bleed, which was discussed with Addenbrooke's Hospital and deemed to be non-survivable. The primary medical cause of death was given as traumatic subdural hemorrhage following a fall." Ms. Blake added, "It is not known what caused the catastrophic bleed to his brain." Norfolk Community Health and Care NHS Trust's Director of Nursing and Quality, Carolyn Fowler, said, "We are currently investigating the concerns raised by Mrs. Breary through our complaints process and will liaise with the family about the outcome and any learning."
A Norfolk holiday group has brought in a team of foraging experts to offer guests one-of-a-kind wild food experience aimed at helping guests immerse themselves in a local culture. Guests at Norfolk Hideaways, North Norfolk Cottages, will soon be able to forage for their own food, accompanied by trained professionals, and learn how to turn what they find into tasty meals. The Norfolk Company is partnering with Wild Food UK to offer the experience, with guests exploring woodlands and coastal locations as part of the tour. Company owners say it's part of a drive to teach holidaymakers about the area they're visiting, with the natural environment a key focus. Norfolk is known for having an abundance of wild food, including puffball mushrooms and samphire. Wild Food UK founder Marlo Renton said Suffolk and Norfolk, with their sprawling woodlands and pristine coastlines, offer a perfect canvas for foraging adventures. These regions are teeming with wild treasures waiting to be unearthed, from rare mushrooms to edible flowers. We are delighted to offer visitors staying at Suffolk and Norfolk Hideaways the opportunity to become foraging experts through our course.
There are hopes to save a Broads Villages post office. Horning Post Office in Lower Street is set to close on May the 11th after postmasters Andrew and Adrienne Seddon announced their retirement after running the service in the village for the past 12 years. Now there are hopes to open a new post office counter at Tidings Newsagents, just 50 yards up the road. However, Gail and Ian Watling, who run the village shop, claim that after inquiring about taking on the terminal, they were told by the post office's area manager that Horning doesn't need a post office. Instead, they say they would need to fund it themselves, which would cost them at least £18,000. All profits would go to the post office, but the couple would earn commission. Mrs. Watling said, "In one breath they say Horning doesn't need a post office, but in the next they say they'll take the profits as long as we fund it. It's ludicrous. I don't run this business to be rich. I just want to live a comfortable life and provide a shop and post office services for the village. There's been a post office in Horning ever since I can remember. It's an essential service that we need to offer because there's nowhere for people to bank or access cash in the village." The shop has been in Mrs. Watling's family since 1989, previously being run by her parents, Ralph and Georgie Morris. A petition to save the post office was launched this week and has already received more than 100 signatures. Duncan Baker, MP for North Norfolk and a former sub-postmaster, is meeting with representatives from the post office this week. He said, "If the post office doesn't get replaced, it will be a hammer blow." A post office spokesperson said, "We are working with an interested retailer to see if there is a feasible solution."
In this week's magazine supplement, there's a Spring in Our Season and Step, a tribute to a product that gave folk an affordable chance to modernise their homes, and The Wind It Is A-Changing. And Keith kicks us off with Spring Is Here, Oh To Be In Cromer, Now The Rest Of Norfolk's There. I proffer a useful theory about T.S. Eliot's famous warning that April is the cruelest month. He had just taken on an allotment in Little Giddon, inevitably described by his poetic friends as the wasteland, and soon realised the plot would thicken with tough jobs like breeding lilacs out of the dead soil. He might have made a perfect celebrity gardener on Current Media merry-go-round, digging terse verse, or the folk quartets sound like ratings winners. Infinitely more acceptable than "I'm a celery picker, get me out of here," or "Let us alone the honeymooner's diet." However, he tended to be wary of trendy critics after one revealed his name almost spelt toilets backwards. Out of such palindromic niceties can initial publicity be fashioned and then fertilised for any amount of outrageous purposes. As someone who has suffered the stings and arrows of belittling name-calling just for being born a skipper nowhere near the sea, I sympathise with all others destined to soak up cheap shots from punny headline writers or so-called friends with safe havens like Smith, Jones, Taylor, Wilson or Stanicle Trot. I was downgraded to cabin boy by a chemistry master who made sure I never got anywhere near a Bunsen burner. I was christened Skippy by school chums with a weird liking for that silly television bush kangaroo, able to describe how seven souls were clinging to life in an old mine shaft just 20 miles north of Alice Springs. I became Skip to a host of sad people, unable to resist the urge to stick rubbish in front. My younger brother got the mini-skip treatment when he arrived at grammar school. I left to await the golden chance of a football reporter's lifetime to tie up two Norwich City players' headline after victory at Charlton on an Easter Saturday. Hot cross bone day. That was about as much atonement I needed before returning to my sensitive role as consoler of those afflicted by clever clog labels. I did make one small exception, however, when a national newspaper headline exclaimed Queen in Brawl at Palace. It referred to Crystal Palace footballer Jerry Queen being sent off for fighting. Thank goodness Joe Royal weren't involved. Of course, the right name for the job can be a blessing as much as a curse when that come to regular advertising. I'll never understand why Joe Root didn't take up hairdressing, or how Alistair Cook failed to appreciate the joys of lemon drizzle and lumpy dough ahead of Lofted Drive and late dabs. A few spoil sports claim there are so many cooks spilling the broth across our television channels, that's hard to find a programme without oven, apron, overheated acting and a big spoon for stirring. On the political front, House of Commons Speaker Sir Lindsay Hoyle is set to invite hungry honourable members to purchase in-house food when he calls order. Among delicacies likely to be teas and taste buds are black rod blancmange, cross party croissants, backbench buns, chamber muesli, early day motion surprise, late night sitting soup, marginal sweets, majority gruel, austerity cutlets and Brexit brulee, with Westminster waffles to follow. Thomas Stearns Eliot does not have the feel to himself when that come to memorable sentiments about the fourth month of the year. The opening lines of Robert Browning's 1845 winner, Home Thoughts from Abroad, is far more famous than the poem itself. He was on holiday in Italy when a sudden burst of homesickness prompted a cry of, "Oh, to be in England, now that April's here." Ah, those refreshing showers and occasional shivers to spice up proper springtime mornings, full of fresh ambition. The road to Easter may be paved with exaggerated hopes for a bumper tourism season. I can hear the chant building as dawn breaks over busy again crab boats. Oh, to be in Cromer, now the rest of Norfolk's there, is a big favourite on packed charabancs hunting for somewhere to park. I jest, of course. I have taken my annual vows to welcome a newly painted holiday bandwagon, careering over the horizon to greet all visitors with a gracious smile and accept the vital importance of their support to our local economy. We've sort of had the place to ourselves since last October, when we tucked in our sheets of self-sufficiency, hauled up the blanket of home rule, and dived under the counterpane of familiarity. Now comes an invigorating wake-up call as big wave of trippers prepare to remind coastal fundamentalists what fashionable watering places were really invented by Victorian visionaries. Trouble is, for those of limited patience, it'll take about 20 minutes of blocked pavements, renegade litter, moaning mothers, fed-up fathers, cheerless children, ignored grandparents, standstill traffic, unsociable dogs, ear-splitting ringtones and occasional hailstones to blow all the good intentions into the old German ocean. With thousands more answering a plea to take breaks close at home while recession stalks the land, more cynical locals could well suggest competition will intensify along our beleaguered coastline regarding this year's Cruellest Month Award. Perhaps another line from the wasteland offer a small tinge of hope. What are the roots that clutch? What branches grow out of this stony rubbish? That item by Keith Skipper was in the EDP of the 8th of April 2023.
Turning to the antiques front, Mike Hicks refers to the two men who changed the world of interior design. Today, more than ever, interior design is important. Discoveries are always being made by designers that enhance a particular scheme in order to create the right look. Various items from the last 300 years are chosen at random to fulfil this aim. An everyday product from the 1920s is one item that is keenly sought after to enhance a decorator's dream. It was a product that was not flash, almost innocuous in appearance, but with a finish, mainly pastel, in colour. Throughout its history, it was never expensive. Between the two wars, people were keen to modernise their homes, and these items seemed to fill the gap. This was Lusty Lloyd Loom, a product that came in all different shapes and sizes that gave instant comfort and looked good. While Lloyd Loom had started in America, William Lusty, a manufacturer making packing cases and various wood products in London, saw an opportunity to be the British representative of the manufacturers, Lloyd's. Well established in the United States, this was a brilliant business move. Now called Lusty Lloyd Loom, produced in the UK, is neither cane nor wicker. It is a stiff wire covered with paper. Yes, paper, cleverly marketed as fibre. The finished product, sprayed any colour, and the various range of products produced was vast. The key to all this was the machine that coated the wire with paper and wove the covered wire into the shape, just the same as if it were wicker, but much, much more versatile. Various labels on the product will help to date your item that you have. Probably the most sought after are the items made between 1940 and 1950, with the CC41 mark, standing for utility, which was a perfect product for these rather austere times. Also, keenly sought but very few found, were the perambulators, which to me evoke the pure Art Deco perfectly. Recently, an attempt was made to start the process in Lincolnshire, but sadly, because of economic pressures, there are no longer any manufacturers of Lloyd Loom in the UK. All Lloyd Loom companies that sell in the UK use highly skilled workers in Indonesian factories to make the frames and weave. These are then finished in UK warehouses. Prices for the vintage items vary enormously, from a few pounds to the low hundreds for a three-piece suite or perambulator in good condition. We owe so much to Marshall Burns Lloyd, the founder in Minneapolis, who saw the transformation from wicker to paper, and William Lusty from London, who manufactured the items in the UK under licence. The two men who changed the domestic scene in the early to mid 20th century. For further reading, there is a book called Lloyd Loom, written by Lee J. Curtis, published by Salander, ISBN number 0-86101-940-7. Mike Hicks was writing in the EDP of the 11th November 2023.
Some 8 years ago, Erlin was pondering, those pearls of wisdom handed down through the generations. I've heard my share. If the wind changes, you'll stay like that. This was the wisdom of my Norfolk Nana, handed down to my Suffolk mum and impressed on me. It was invoked whenever I pulled a face. In retrospect, it was a bit unfair, because when you're also told children should be seen and not heard, there is little to do except fool faces. I would try them out in front of a mirror, so that if the wind did change and I did stay like that, it wouldn't be too terrible. I just about got away with it, I think. Manifestations of childishness were discouraged, closed down and sat on hard when I was a kid. In the 50s, grown-ups ruled. Ideally, I would have liked to have been heard, but resorted to making sure I was being seen by fidgeting. By the age of five, I was an experienced fidgeter. At an afternoon tea with my great-grandmother or with the two sisters who lived in the bungalow at the end of the row, I would often be asked if I had worms. They would try and ignore me as I wriggled, my face impassive in case of a sudden change from the prevailing southwesterlies. Eventually, they could take no more. "Do you need to go to the toilet, Lynn?" "Yes," I would lie, just to be allowed to get away from the polite tea time conversation, which in retrospect was probably quite scurrilous, as women would mouth words to one another and make oblique references to nocturnal goings-on involving the woman next door but one, whose husband was a travelling salesman and away during the week. In the relative freedom of the bathroom, I would inspect the toiletries and pot plants. It was not unknown for me to emerge with a cactus spine in my finger. "How did you do that, Lynn?" "I only touched it." "Sit down and eat your rusk." There was never enough butter on them. Occasionally, I would hum a tune. "Sing at the table, die in the workhouse," my Nana would pronounce tartly. My fate was sealed, even though I wasn't sure what that entailed. In the film Oliver, the children are all at the tables in the workhouse when they sing "Food, Glorious Food." So that was prophetic, I guess. "Don't do as I do as I say," made me long to be older, so I stored away that naughty word my uncle used, determined to try it out at school. When proudly I used it in the playground at morning break, the other children knew it already, but taking pity on me, gave me a few worse ones and recommended I try them out on my mum. That was when I got the ultimate, "If I hear you say that again, I'll wash your mouth out with soap and water." Then there was "Eat your crusts, there are children starving." And the catch-all, "Because I said so." This is the only one that tempts me when George and I have a "What shall we do?" conversation. "Grandma, can I get the Play-Doh out, please?" "Not today, George. I'd only just finished picking up the last batch of dry nuggets out of the wool pile carpet." "Can we go to the museum?" "Not today." "Why?" This is the point where I have to consider carefully what I say next. The truthful answer would be, "Well, George, the last time we went there, you thundered around the entire museum in less than 10 minutes and then wanted to go and buy something in the shop." Obviously, I don't say that. An interest in antiquities, like grandparents, however fleeting, must be encouraged. "Because we are going somewhere else today." "Is it the seaside?" "No." "Why?" "Because we have to go shopping." It is sad to see a three-year-old's excitement wither on the vine. "Then can we go to the seaside?" "No," anticipating next question, "because it's not really warm enough to sit on the beach." "Why?" "Because it's raining and the sun isn't out." "Why?" "Because it's July and we're in England." "Shall we get the Play-Doh out?" I say with a grimace. And then the wind changed. That article was from the EDP of the 15th of July 2016.
This week, strolling down the garden path, Sam Wiley-Harris says it's time to bring those green fingers into play and introduces us to expert David Dominey, gardener and horticulturist, who begins, "Making sure your garden is spring ready is a wonderful way to get yourself outside and enjoy the early spring sunshine. I always look forward to the early spring months as there are so many excuses to get outside and in the garden. Weeding. One of the most important overall gardening jobs you should focus on, regardless of whether it's your flowering beds or your vegetable patch, is weeding," says Dominey. "Making sure you are on top of perennial and annual weeds is essential to guaranteeing a healthy garden patch. Hoeing a larger area will be ideal for dislodging small and annual garden weeds, whilst weeding by hand will help you to remove more established weeds. How to have the perfect vegetable patch. Now is the perfect time to plant onions, shallots and garlic sets. You can do this successionally to produce batches of this crop throughout the year. Starting now, you can do this every few weeks through to April, which will extend your cropping season. Also, you can plant your second early and main crop potatoes at this time after any risk of frost has passed, notes Dominie. The second earlies, new potatoes, will be ready to harvest in July and August, and the main crop potatoes can be enjoyed from August to October, perfect for warm meals in cooler temperatures. Additionally, early April is ideal for sowing flowering companions for your vegetable plots, such as pot marigolds, whose fragrant foliage can deter some pests from your crops. Consistent flowering. With flowers starting to make their appearance, there are several ways you can ensure consistent flowering. If you would like to produce a pollinator-friendly wild flower meadow, get started early by sowing seeds in trays. Then, once any risk of frost has passed, these can be sown outside for the perfect treat for your local pollinator population. You can also use this time to plant your roses, shrubs and climbers, which gives them plenty of time to establish before flowering in the coming months, highlights Dominie. A brilliant task to enjoy with your children, sunflower seeds are large enough for small fingers to handle, and their quick growth gives children a wonderful reward for their efforts in no time. Create a planting calendar so you can make sure your garden beds are fully prepared for sowing seeds, what time of the year to sow them, and when you can expect to harvest. Prep before you sow. Ensure your garden is ready to cultivate the healthiest and most productive plants by improving your soil before sowing and planting. Organic matter dug into the soil, any compost you have produced last year, or even composted leaves you have been saving from last autumn, will all add wonderful nutrients to the soil. Start seeds indoors. Sow some long season seeds indoors, which are better suited to more consistently warm soil to start them off. Some great examples include broccoli, cauliflower, and tomatoes. Collect rainwater. Make sure you have a water butt or a similar alternative to collect rainwater. Now is the perfect time to do it, with April showers looming, as you never know when precious rainwater will be sparsely available in summer dry spells. Sharpen your tools. Make sure your garden tools are spring ready. Give them a good clean if you haven't already, making sure to put them away dry to avoid rusting. Sharpen secateurs and check the edges of spades and hand tools like trowels in case they need attention. That last item by Sam Wiley Harris in the EDP of 6th of April 2024 concludes this week's magazine supplement. And we thank the editors of the EDP and North Norfolk News and their contributors for permission to use their material.
You are listening to edition number 1912 of The Mardler, recorded on Friday the 19th of April 2024. We have reports on Is Pizza Chain's Rural Plan Bad News for Our Local Businesses?, Award-winning theatre group prepares for musical, and 9 secret local gardens opening in May, among others to come. But alas, this week, nothing to report from the obituary column or the letters page. So, to the first of those final items. Already the most prolific pizza chain in the country, Domino's, has revealed plans to open swathes of new sites across rural towns and villages. Bethany Wales looks at what this means for the local economy. With more than 1,300 outlets across the UK, 16 of which are in East Anglia, Domino's is already the biggest takeaway pizza brand in the country. The US export is famous for its half-price deals, often promoted via colourful flyers thrust through the letterboxes of nearby homes and extensive TV advertising, which over the past 20 years or so have helped to grow the company's revenue to more than £679 million. Aside from its discount-driven sales strategy, the firm attributes its success to its franchise business model, which has allowed it to dilute the risk of rapid expansion and reach new, more rural markets. Following the massively successful performance of its small-town sites, Chief Executive Andrew Rennie said the firm is looking to open 70 more in rural locations. Domino's expansion plans are similar to that of Pret-a-Manger, which has already been targeting towns and villages amid a rise in remote working, and Greggs, which has plans to open as many as 160 new shops. Although exact locations haven't yet been announced, a planning application submitted last week outlined Domino's plans to take over a former hardware shop in Long Stratton. And while the firm is keen to tout the benefits its stores bring to local communities, namely jobs and quality pizza, nearby businesses are less convinced. For business owners like Vanessa Scott, director of Stratton's Hotel in Swaffham, Domino's arrival last year felt like a blow. She said, "Chains like Domino's undermine local businesses because you simply can't compete with prices or convenience. They've taken over and it seems there's nothing we can do to stop it. I'm very fed up."
That article continues. Big multinational chains like Domino's often have the scale to undercut local competitors, both in terms of prices and opening hours. And while this has the potential to increase footfall in the area, Mrs. Scott said the benefits to the local economy are virtually zero. She said they might employ local people, but that's where it ends in terms of being responsible and enhancing the community. When we make a pizza, we put effort into sourcing our ingredients locally, which in turn helps other businesses and grows a healthy local economy. Our flour would come from Haygates down the road. The produce would be from Starling's, and we get the yeast from a local supplier. But because Domino's is a franchise, they buy everything in from a central place. On the one hand, you can understand it because they want a pizza in Norfolk to taste the same as it does in Glasgow. But the fact is that they're not putting anything back into the rural economy, and that's to our detriment. They're not trying to live alongside the community. They're trying to get the lion's share of the business and don't care about the knock-on effects. I am an independent. Not everybody agrees with Mrs. Scott's take. Kevin Foley is a second-generation McDonald's franchise owner with more than 14 restaurants across East Anglia. He said despite operating under the most recognisable fast food brand in the world, he still feels like an independent business owner. "I guess the way I see it is that I'm independent. It's my name on the branches and my business to run how I want to. The products are bought from a central point and the training material is from central. But what we deliver on a daily basis is all decided locally. The difference is that unlike a company with just one burger shop, I have the advantage of huge brand awareness and can ride on the coattails of that global advertising." Mr. Foley's Mac Empire has doubled in size over the past few years. He now employs more than 1,600 people, offering what he describes as flexible, reliable work with clear career progression opportunities. He said, "When higher level jobs come up, I don't try to hire from outside business, so there's a lot of room for progression, which means a lot of local jobs. In places like Cromer, where a lot of the work is seasonal, we can also offer year-round employment not readily available otherwise. As a franchisee, I actually understand the communities I'm working in a way that the central company couldn't. We get heavily involved with local causes, like supporting Wyndham Rugby Club, And having that big McDonald's name behind us helps us do even more good.
A Cromer-based theatre group, Seasods, has clinched regional awards for their acclaimed production of the musical Evita. The show bagged Best Musical and Best Overall Production at the recent NODA East Awards held on April 7th. This is the first time Seasods, Cromer and Sheringham Operatic and Dramatic Society, an amateur troupe, performed an Andrew Lloyd Webber spectacle in their 110-year existence. The accomplishment feels more rewarding, given that the production overcame many challenges, mainly that it was the group's first performance sung entirely without spoken words. Martin Rodwell, a Cromer Cafe proprietor and the show's director, said receiving these awards today reminded me what an incredibly talented group Seasods is and what a pleasure it was to work with them. Norfolk actor Emmy Wright was highlighted for her role as Eva Perron in Evita. Ms. Wright will now also take on the role of one of three lead actresses in the upcoming performance 9 to 5, the musical, scheduled at Cromer Pier. The rehearsing is currently underway with performances scheduled from May 25th to June the 1st. 9 to 5, the musical, is inspired by the hit film from 1980 starring Dolly Parton. It chronicles the tale of three office employees who overcome their issues and dominate over their sexist superior. The comical and inspiring show, boosted by Dolly Parton's spectacular songs, offers a potent message of empowerment and even features an appearance by Parton herself. Tickets for the Seasods presentation of 9 to 5 the musical at Cromer Pier from May 25th to June 1st can be purchased at cromerpier.co.uk or by phoning 01263 512 495.
Enjoy beautiful blooms across Norfolk, with these 9 secret spots opening to the public in May 2024 as part of the National Gardens Scheme, NGS. The NGS gives visitors unique access to more than 3,500 private gardens across the UK. It raises money for nursing and health charities through admissions, teas and cake. 1. Wreatham Lodge, East Wreatham. When? May the 5th to 6th, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. A 10-acre garden surrounding a former Georgian rectory, not open, with bluebell and woodland walks and an abundance of spring flowers. 2. Barton Bendish Hall, Barton Bendish. When? May the 12th, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. There are 10 acres set within farmland in this traditional private country estate garden. 3. Home Hale Hall, Home Hale. When? May the 12th, 12 noon to 4 p.m. Marvel at a walled kitchen garden designed by Arne Maynard. 130-year-old wisteria and a wild flower meadow. 4. Study Lodge, Milton Constable. When? May the 14th, 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. Spectacular gardens with one of the largest concentrations of rhododendrons and azaleas in East Anglia. 5. Blickling Lodge, Blickling. When? May the 19th, 12 noon to 5 p.m. A Georgian house, not open, set in 17 acres of parkland, including a cricket pitch, walled kitchen garden and woodland water garden. 6. Ferndale, 14 Porringland Road, Upper Stoke Holy Cross. When? May the 26th, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. A third of an acre featuring seating areas, arches, flower borders, a pond, vegetable plots and a greenhouse. 7. Lexham Hall, Litcham. When? May the 26th, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Parkland with lake and river walks surround this historic house, not open, featuring a formal garden with roses and a traditional working kitchen garden. 8. Warborough House, 2 Wells Road, Stiffkey. When, May the 26th, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. A 7-acre garden of contrasts, from formal terraces to a wild flower area on a steep chalk slope surrounding a 19th century house, not open. 9 Hoe Hall, Dereham. When, open by arrangement from May the 15th to June the 30th. Visit a walled garden featuring a long white wisteria walk in the grounds of a Georgian rectory, surrounded by parkland. Find out further details, including admission prices and pre-book, if required, at ngs.org.uk.
And another, Seaside Fish and Chip Shop announces reopening date. A Seaside Fish and Chip Shop is set to reopen this summer after being closed for almost a year following a fire. Stevenson's Fish Bar in Sheringham High Street was completely gutted when a chip pan caught fire in July last year. Owner Rob Wicks, who took over the fish and chip shop just weeks before the fire, said despite the interior of the shop being destroyed in the blaze, the building itself survived. Now work is underway to refurbish the chippy, with plans to reopen on June the 1st. We're looking forward to reopening and seeing all our customers again, Mr. Wick said. We're happy that the work is now underway. Work began this week and we've started pulling the ceilings down and stripping it out. All of the new equipment is ordered, so June the 1st is our preliminary opening date. It's been challenging for both myself and my staff, but we're just looking forward to getting back into it now. I think it's going to look really smart, and we can't wait to see it all come together. And on the local events page, next Thursday, the 24th of April, Martin Turner, ex-Wishbone Ash, at 7:30, tickets £20, with his band, at the Madam Market Theatre, Norwich, box office at madammarket.org, 01603 620 917.
A coffee shop chain is causing a stir in a Norfolk town over the placement of its sign. Costa Coffee in Cromer has been angering locals who say the position of one of its signs is blocking the pavement. They say the sign, which is placed outside the chain's Church Street coffee shop, is obstructing the pavement for pedestrians and wheelchair users. Now North Norfolk District Council, NNDC, has contacted Costa to get the sign moved. Costa don't seem to have any consideration for the local community in Cromer, one local said. I can only assume they've been told about this in the past, but after a short time they ignore the warning and push out towards the curb again. Costa seem to want to have it all for themselves. Tim Adams, leader of NNDC, who represents the Cromer Town Ward, said, I received a complaint and observed the issue myself. I later corresponded with Costa, who forwarded it to their area manager. Costa Coffee was approached for comment.
A Norfolk MP has raised more than £100,000 for local charities. Duncan Baker, MP for North Norfolk, has broken his six-figure fundraising target ahead of his double marathon challenge, which gets underway this weekend. Mr. Baker is running the London Marathon this Sunday, followed by the Norfolk Marathon just 7 days later. He's raising money for 52 North Norfolk charities, one for every mile of his grueling double marathon challenge. The £100,000 he has raised to date is an accumulation of the money he has managed to raise since running his first marathon in 2021. I'm delighted that I've hit the £100,000 mark before the race, Mr. Baker said. Now I'm very nervous about remaining injury free because it's not just running one marathon, it's two. The big test is being able to recover in such a short space of time to run again. When I set out to start running in lockdown, it was never to do this. It was to simply raise a bit of money for local charities. But it's been so successful and people have been so supportive that in the end I set about trying to raise £100,000. Now to be able to have broken that figure is incredible. I think we'll be on for in excess of £23,000 this year. Given all the difficulties people are facing in life financially, I'm just blown away. To donate to Mr. Baker's fundraiser, visit justgiving.com/page/Duncan-Baker-Double-Marathon-Challenge for his Just Giving page, or post a cheque to his office, Tudor House, Grammar School Road, North Walsham, NR28 9JH. Cheques must be made out to the Norfolk Community Foundation.
A well-known town sign has been refurbished and rededicated after 46 years by the council and citizens. Sheringham's town sign is getting the overhaul following considerable efforts by Councillor John Dory and Terry Reid. The duo completed their task of restoring the old sign, presented to the town by then Sheringham Chamber of Trade Chairman Joe Paris back in 1978, and reintroduced it in its usual spot outside Royal Mail Delivery Office. A service to rededicate the sign took place on Tuesday, April the 2nd, and was honoured by the presence of town councillors and members of Experience Sheringham, a trade advocacy group formerly known as the Sheringham Chamber of Trade. This service recreated the day when the emblem was first revealed, more than four decades ago. The Reverend Christian Haycox blessed the refurbished sign, replicating its original inauguration. The restoration features arms that were granted to Sheringham Urban District Council in March 1953. After Sheringham Urban District Council was dissolved in 1974, the rights were passed to STC. Its symbolism represents the town's heritage, with two pine cones set against a green background signifying the pine woods behind the town, and a 16th century fishing vessel in full sail. The lobster encircled in gold stands for Sheringham's wealth derived from the sea. Below the crest, the town motto, Mare didat pinusque decorat, the sea enriches and the pine adorns, shines proudly. Current Mayor Peter Radcliffe said, "It is with gratitude that as the current Mayor, I am pleased to recognise the efforts of Councillor John Dory and Mr. Terry Reid, who have rescued the sign, which benefits from a substantially refurbished post that will hopefully ensure it stands proudly here for at least another 50 years.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of The Mardler with readings from the North Norfolk News. If you have any comments or queries, our listener liaison officer is Imogen Watterson on 01263 587610. And of course, if you have a smartphone, tablet or computer, or know someone who has, you can listen to this and other editions online at mardler.org.uk. But please, when returning the pouch and memory stick, remember to reverse the label.
The sound engineer was Julia Bloomfield, the editor-producer Peter Adamson, and our colleagues in the copying and dispatch room join us in thanking you for listening and wishing you a week long to be remembered, and we look forward to joining you again next Friday, but for now it's
cheerio!